So can someone switch off the lights? We will now start. Krishna. Sorry, the slide hasn't come out well, but anyway, the topic for today is the law of karma and the wheel of samsara. A very, very important subject for all of us to understand very clearly. Yesterday, we discussed that the material body undergoes change from birth to death, but the soul never undergoes any change. Dehinosmin yatha dehi kaumaram yovanam jaram tathana dehantara prapti dhirastatra namuhyati. Just as the body changes from childhood to youth to old age, similarly, the body gets destroyed at the time of death. To all these different changes of bodies, now moves to another body. So this is the destination of the soul. The body is destroyed, but the soul remains because it is eternal. And then it occupies another body according to its karma. We also saw that the body is like a dress for the soul. Vasamsa jirnani yatha vihaya navani grihnati naroparani tatha sharirani vihaya jirnani anyani sanyati navani dehi. Just as we give up our clothes at the end of the day and don new clothes, similarly the soul sheds one set of clothes, in other words one body, and it accepts another one. Right down here you see the soul is unzipping. It is like a symbolic description, changing the body, changing the dress. And then there are so many other bodies to take, one after the other. And in this way, the cycle of death and birth continues. This is called the wheel of samsara. This samsara is a cycle of birth and death, sometimes compared to an ocean, where all the living beings are suffering, being tossed about the powerful waves, up and down, up and down. And this wheel is going round and round. It is constantly moving. It has been moving from time immemorial, and it will continue to move eternally. Till we decide that we do not want to be part of this wheel. Just like in the fun fair, they have this wheel that goes round and round and round. That is called the merry-go-round. But this is not a merry-go-round. It is a miserable go-round. We are going round and round. Sometimes in the tree species, sometimes among the fish, sometimes among the birds, sometimes among the animals, sometimes among the human beings. The soul is constantly changing dresses or changing bodies. And this phenomenon is called samsara. So when we talk of samsara, we should know we are referring to birth and death. So in what kind of bodies can the soul accept a moving? In this slide, we are seeing the different forms or the different species that are available in material nature. In the Padma Puran, it is explained that there are 84 lakh species. The biologists, how many species have they discovered? Very few. But in the Puranas, we have the understanding of the exact number. Jalaja Navalakshani means there are 9 lakh species that live in the water. Jalaja, those which are born in the water, aquatics. So right at the bottom, you are seeing aquatics, fish. There are 9 lakh species. Sthavara Lakshavimshati. Sthavara means those that are not moving, like the trees, plants. Vimshati, that means 20 lakhs of plants. and trees. Karmalo Rudra Sankhyakaha. In insects and reptiles, there are 11 lakh. So many. Pakshinam Dasalakshanam. The birds are 10 lakhs. Trinsha Lakshani Pashavaha. 30 lakh pashus or animals. Chatur Lakshani Manushaha. 4 lakh human beings, species of human beings. So we generally think of human beings as one species, but the Shastras think of the human beings as 4 lakh species. Why? Because there are different grades and levels of consciousness and thinking. Here, the difference may not be much of external appearance. It doesn't matter what is our complexion, what is our, whether our eyes are slanting or eyes are straight. No, these are external things. But here, it is the question of consciousness. What is the level of our consciousness? There are some human beings who are absolutely on the level of animals. There are some who are little better, some little better, some more better, and so on and so forth, to the highest level, where there are some human beings who are really on the topmost platform of purity, great sages who are self-realized. So they are represent the topmost level of consciousness. So therefore, the Atma can occupy any of these species, and it will continue in this cycle. And from the bottom, there is a continuous hierarchy. For an Atma that is occupying the fish body, for example, it doesn't have to worry, it will get automatic promotion. The Atma will move to the next higher species. First, it will have to exhaust all the species in the aquatics. Having done that, it will move to the next higher level. Then it will go through all the species, the 11 lakh species there, get a body in each of them, and then again move upwards to the next higher one. In this way, it moves higher and higher and higher. Just like a student moves from first to second, second to third, and all the way up to the tenth, which represents the human species. So the lowermost species are like the first standard, and the highest species, the human beings, are like the tenth standard. So in this way, there is spiritual evolution. The scientist Charles Darwin has spoken of biological evolution, in which he claims that man has originated from monkey. But this is a great mythology. It is a great speculation. There is evolution, but of a different kind, and that is spiritual evolution, where the soul is changing body after body, gradually progressing to higher and higher and higher species of life, till it finally comes to the human platform. In the human platform, now this is a critical juncture. In the human form of life, we can decide whether we want to remain in the human form of life, whether we want to go to the higher species, in the demigods, or whether we want to descend to the lower species of the animals, the insects, the plants, and so on. So you see, right here towards the bottom is the human species. On top, you see the demigod species. Actually, the Devas and Devatas, they also come within the 4 lakh species of the human beings. They are also like human beings, but much more powerful. So therefore, one can get a body of a human being, of a demigod. We discussed the other day that a demigod is just a post. Just like finance minister is a post. Similarly, the god of wealth, the finance minister of the universe, is Kuber. That's a post. So Kuber is a post, it is not a person. But a qualified and suitable person gets a chance to become Kuber. A suitable person gets a chance to become Indra, or Brahma, or Vayu, or Varna, and so on. So the present name of the Indra that we have now is Purandar. the present name of Suryadev is Vivaswan. So just like the finance minister has a name, a Mr. Sinha, no? Mr. Sinha, he is a finance minister. So the person is different, the post is different. So any jiva can also become a demigod. Similarly, the jiva can also occupy all these other different species of life. So here you see a pictorial representation of what the universe is all about. This is the only thing that is happening. The Atman is just from time immemorial changing body after body after body. We have been doing this for millions and millions of lifetimes. And unless we come to the spiritual path and understand and follow the message of Bhagavad Gita, we will continue in this cycle of birth and death forever. Here also we see how a human being can actually either descend to the lower species or elevate the consciousness and go higher. So this human form of life is like a junction. Just like you have a railway junction. When you come to that junction, then you can move to so many different railway stations. But at certain railway stations, you can go only forward or backwards, like at Belgaum. But when you go to some other like Miraj, then you can go in so many different directions. So the human form of life is like a junction. By performing karma, you can either remain in the human species of life, or you can go down, or you can go up. So the human form of life, therefore, is a very, very important opportunity for us to get out of the cycle of birth and death. In fact, it is the only opportunity. One cannot go out of the cycle of birth and death even from the bodies of the heavenly, of the residents of the heavenly planets. That is also very difficult. But for the human species, it is possible. It is stated in the scripture that even the devas and devatas are standing in line, in queue, to take birth on earth, and specifically in Bharatvarsha, just because there is such a strong Sanskriti or culture of bhakti here, because there is so much wealth and opulence and facilities for worldly pleasures in the heavenly planets, that they cannot properly execute bhakti. So they want to be born here. So this middle level, earthly level planetary system is the most important in the whole universe. From the higher planets, they have to come down here, and from the lower planets, they have to come up here. And then from here, they can go out of the material world if they are qualified. So here, the description of the process by which the Atma leaves one body and enters another is described in the Bhagavad Gita. Just like now here you are seeing some delicious foodstuffs. Now, how can you understand that there is some nice food being prepared? Sometimes you can understand that even though you cannot see it. Why? Because of the aroma or the fragrance of the food. The air carries the fragrance or the aroma of the food from one room to another room where you are sitting. It enters your nostrils and then you are able to perceive. Exactly in the same way, Lord Krishna explains in the Bhagavad Gita that the subtle body carries the soul from one gross body to another gross body. We saw yesterday that there are two kinds of material bodies we have. There is the gross body, which consists of earth, water, fire, air and ether. That is the gross body that we all see and touch and feel. And then there is a subtle body, which is made up of man, buddhi, ahankar, mind, intelligence and false ego. It is just like our inner clothing and outer clothing. See, Similarly, the soul has an inner clothing of the subtle body and the outer clothing of the gross body. At the time of death, the soul gives up the outer clothing of the gross body, but the inner clothing remains. And this inner clothing or the subtle body acts as a vehicle to transfer the soul from one gross body to another. In the same way, it is explained by Lord Krishna in the Bhagavad Gita, Yam yam vati smaran bhavam, yajityante kalevaram, tam tam evaiti kaunteyam, sada tat bhava bhavitaha. Whatever you think of at the time of death, my dear Arjuna, that state you will definitely attain without fail. In other words, our consciousness at the time of our death determines what is going to be the next life we will obtain. Our karma of the present determines the body of the next life. It is the consciousness towards the end of our life that is the determining factor. But what determines our consciousness at the time of death? Our consciousness during our life determines our consciousness at death. Just like how a student performs in an examination is determined by how the student has studied throughout the previous year. So, the consciousness that a living being develops or cultivates in a particular life is a subtle thing. It is the development of the subtle body. And those impressions are there. And because of the subtle impressions created, that goes ahead to create the next body. The next gross body is already being created, is being made ready, even as the soul is about to leave a particular gross body. So this is a mechanism of reincarnation, or the change of body. Just like a caterpillar moves from one leaf to another leaf, and when it catches hold of the next leaf, it slowly gives up the next leaf, the previous leaf. In the same way, the subtle body of the living being is already destined for the next body. The next father and mother are already decided. They may be in the human species, or animal, or plant, or any species of life. But the subtle body, because of the subtle impressions in the ether, they create the gross body. And in this way, the Atma is taken away, karmana daivanetrena, under divine supervision, under the laws of nature. And the laws of nature are operating under the superintendence of the Lord Himself. So the Lord as Paramatma in our heart is overseeing and supervising this change of body. So He makes sure that we get the right kind of body, so no mistakes happen. It is not that we are destined to get the body of an animal, but suddenly by some mistake in the calculations or the computer, that we go to the heavenly planets. Sometimes this may happen, things may happen here, but ultimately the Paramatma is in control. So this is a mechanism of reincarnation. It is just like the aroma of the food. It is a very subtle thing. Aroma cannot be touched, but you can still perceive. So the same way the change of body takes place. Therefore, what we become in our next life is determined by what we have been doing in this life. We prepare our consciousness, and by our consciousness we prepare the next body. So the next body is obtained according to our karma. Karma is a price you have to pay to attain the next body. So yes, nature is fulfilling all our desires, and it gives us just the right kind of body in which we can fulfill all our desires. If somebody wants to eat meat, for example, that is not, the human body is not the proper instrument to do that. If somebody really wants to eat meat, then he should have a tiger's body, because a tiger really knows how to eat meat. Its body is designed for that. Its teeth, the digestive system, the alimentary canal, everything is properly designed for that. It's claws to kill the animal. So if somebody wants meat, then Mother Nature says, why should I waste a human body for you? The human body is so precious. It is meant for self-realization. It is meant for pure living and high thinking. And you are simply wasting time like a tiger. So let me give you the body of a tiger. So we get the body of a tiger in the next life. And we can eat meat to our heart's content. How much do you want to eat meat? Eat all day. Then somebody likes to eat so many other dirty, filthy things. So Mother Nature says, this is not what the human body is meant for. Take the body of a pig. Because a pig habitually eats all kinds of filthy things. Therefore, take the body of a pig. So Mother Nature wants to utilize all her resources very optimally. Therefore, she has given us the best kind of body tailor-made to suit our desires. Just like we go to a tailor, and the tailor takes measurements of our body, and we tell him to make our shirt or our dress according to the latest fashion of the day, according to our desire, and the tailor makes it, but you also have to have the money to pay it. So also the jiva has so many desires, and Mother Nature, like the expert tailor, says, alright, I have the right dress for you, the right kind of body. So here, take up this body. So you can eat all kinds of filthy food. In the same way, so these are different garments. The body is like a garment. You can select from any number of garments. There are 84 lakh garments available. Now there are many shops in Belgaum that sell shirts, trousers, sarees and so on. Have you gone to any shop? Have you gone to any shop that has 84 lakh varieties of clothes? So Mother Nature has such a cloth shop. Nobody has a bigger cloth shop than Mother Nature. She has 84 lakh varieties for you. All the latest fashions, the old fashions, everything is available. And she has a perfect tailor to make your design. What size, how much, and then you have to choose which one do I want, and you can select that particular cloth. But you will be able to get it only according to the price you can pay. That is what you desire and what you deserve. So for every desire and every situation, there is an appropriate clothing. When you are about to go to bed, you wear one kind of clothing. When you are about to go to your office, you wear another kind of clothing. When you are in a swimming pool, you wear another kind of clothing. Now what will happen if you go to your office in the clothes that you wear in the swimming pool? Or what will happen when you go to the swimming pool in your office clothes? In your tie and suit, you jump in the swimming pool. It will be a very awkward situation. So every environment has a specifically designed clothing. So similarly, every kind of desire, every possible permutation and combination of desires have a particular body just tailor-made to suit you. So Mother Nature or Maya is saying, come into my shop. See the wonderful variety I have for you. Take your pick. What do you want? You don't have much money? Alright, select this one. You have more money? Select the demigod's body. You have less money? Take the insect's body. So according to our karma, we get the next body. If somebody likes to sleep a lot, then Mother Nature says, this body is not meant to sleep and sleep. It is meant to minimize sleeping so that you can spend more time for self-realization. So why should I give you the body of a human only to sleep? So next life, I will give you a nice body of a bear in which you can sleep 6 months in the year. No problem, you will be very happy. Similarly, if somebody likes to expose the body, then Mother Nature says, human beings are not meant to expose the body. Human beings are meant to live a life of culture, of shame. Therefore, if you do not want to cover the body nicely, Mother Nature says, alright, I have the perfect body for you, the body of a tree. Because a tree has to stand without any clothes in the summer, winter, rain, in the snow. So these are different kinds of bodies that we can attain according to our karma, each according to our desire. This is the way the transmigration takes place. So therefore, we have talked so much about the law of karma, that according to karma, we get this kind of body, that kind of body. So what exactly is this law of karma? Very simply put, law of karma means that for every action, there is an appropriate reaction. For those of you who are students of science or have been in your college or school days, you know that there is a similar law existing at the cross level, that for every action, there is an equal and opposite reaction. So it is a similar law at a subtle level. The laws of science operate at a gross level, but the law of karma operates even at the subtle level. It even operates at the level of the thought. Even the thought has an effect. So this is the law of karma. It is the law of cause and effect. When there is a cause, there is an effect. Every cause must have an effect, and every effect must have a cause. It is a law of action and reaction. Everybody is subject to this law. Nobody can escape. Whether one is a small person or a big person, all are subject to the law of karma. Generally speaking, there are three kinds of karma or activities that we can do in our life. One is called karma. Of course, karma can be used in two ways. Karma generally means any kind of activity we perform. That is also called karma. But karma is also another special kind of activity, which is called punya, which is material activity, but it is pious activity. And then there is vikarma, which is sin, which is a violation against the laws of God. And then there is akarma, which are spiritual activities. So let us briefly discuss these two kinds of activities, and then at the end we will talk a little about akarma, and akarma we will discuss also more when we come to the sixth day. So punya or pious activities involves many things which are considered to be charitable, philanthropic. For example, we give money to the poor, or we may feed the poor, or open a blind home, or plant trees, dig a well, do notebooks to poor students. And these are all kinds of pious activities. And by doing such pious activities, which are on the material platform, although they are good activities, they have nothing to do with anything spiritual. But still, we get a good result. Like somebody may be very beautiful. This is also a result of past pious karma. Otherwise, why out of so many beautiful ladies, one lady becomes only the Miss whatever, what is it, Miss something, Miss Universe or World. So why is it? Some pious activity performed in the previous life. Why does someone become a king? Because of pious activity performed in the previous life. Can you focus? Focus. You have got the idea that he is a king. he is being worshipped by all his citizens. Such a lofty position. Over the top of an elephant, has so many huge palaces and wealth and armies, so much power over people. So, who becomes a king? Why does someone become a king and someone a pauper? Because someone has committed many, many pious activities. Therefore, he becomes a king. In fact, by performing pious activities, you can even be elevated to the heavenly planets. You can even become a demigod. And if you finish 100 such lives, continuously doing pious activities according to the Varnashram Dharma, you can even become Mr. Brahma. You can become the creator of the universe. This is all possible simply by performing punya or pious activity, karma. But please note that still this is material. It has nothing to do with spirituality. People generally confuse pious material activity with spiritual activity. So when we talk of spirituality, people say, yes, I am also spiritual minded. I am also giving money to the poor. I am also doing such social welfare activities. But these are material. They have nothing to do with the Atma. These activities simply pertain to helping the prisoners move from third class cell to second class cell, from second class cell to first class cell. That is all. But they do not help the prisoners to come out of the cycle of birth and death. So by performing various kinds of punya, our stock of punya increases. Just like a person who works very hard. So this is a slide to show the heavenly planets, that you can even attain the heavenly planets by performing punya. Down here you have the material, the lower planetary systems like the earth, and on top you have the heavenly planets, which can be reached by punya. So, by performing punya, one achieves happiness materially, just like a person who works or does his business for some time, he earns a lot of money, and then he decides to take a vacation. Then he goes to enjoy his vacation. He may go to Kerala on the beach or Hawaii if he has more money, and he will do all these things. So, he spends all the money that he has saved up. And gradually, as every day goes by, when he is enjoying more and more and more, what is happening? The stock of his money that he has carried with him is going down and down and down. So he is able to enjoy to the level or the extent of how much money he has accumulated. And when that stock comes down and down and finally comes to zero, then he has to return to his business or his job. Then he will have to start working all over again. Similarly, by performing punya, we are increasing our stock, and then, for example, if we get elevated to the heavenly planet, then we exhaust our good activity by the act of enjoyment. Every time we enjoy in the heavenly planets, some stock of punya has reduced. So by continuous repeated enjoyment for many thousands of years in the heavenly planets, finally, when the stock of punya has come down, 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 then the Atma falls down to the earth again. Kshene punya matilokam vishanti. Lord Krishna explains in the Gita that when the punya kshene then becomes finished, then matilokam vishanti, then he returns again to this earth planet. So therefore, by performing pious activity, you earn only temporary material facilities and pleasure. But once you have enjoyed the benefit of all of these things, you come back again to your original position. And here are examples of pap, vikarma, sin, activities like killing. It's a horrible activity which is going to get similar reaction. Here we see a symbol, a symbolic representation. A man is killing a cow. We're going to see something funny here. What do you see funny? You see that the faces are interchanged. The cow has a human face, and a human has a cow's face. Why is that? First and foremost, killing is sin, but killing not only human beings, killing any living beings is sin. And killing mother cow is considered a very great sin, because cow is like our mother. So killing a cow is like killing our mother. It is an act of great cruelty and foolishness and brings about very severe reactions. It is explained in the scripture that when one kills an animal, particularly an animal like a cow, then one suffers the reaction in the next life by becoming that animal. That animal becomes human being who will kill us. So we exchange or interchange positions. That is the reason the faces here are being interchanged. Actually, meat eating or killing of animals is a great sin. When we eat meat, we are taking the life of innocent living creatures. The Sanskrit word for meat is mas. Mas comes actually from the two Sanskrit words mam saha. I means man, and saha means he. So, when we kill the animal, we are actually saying, in next life, man saha, I will become he in the next life. In other words, when we keep on doing this, one day, sins will dawn. How many animals have I killed? And how many times will I have to be born again as an animal, only to be killed and slaughtered very horribly in some slaughterhouse or in some butcher shop? So therefore, one should not perform such sinful activities as killing animals, and particularly the cow. Here we see an example of another sin, stealing. And so long as we think that something is our property, we are all thieves. Why is that? Because God is the only proprietor of anything and everything. Nothing belongs to us. One time, there was a man who approached King Alexander, his friend. And this man had been arrested for stealing in the kingdom, in Greece. So King Alexander wanted him punished. So that man was very intelligent. At the same time, he was also very bold. So he told the king, he said, "Now, dear king, I am a poor man. I stole only for the sake of filling my belly. But I am a small thief and you are a big thief. So why are you punishing a small thief like me when you go unpunished?" So King Alexander was very surprised to hear this statement. So he asked this man, "Can you explain what you mean?" So this man said, "Who is a thief? A thief is one who usurps another's property and takes it to be his own. You are going all over the world and conquering other people's lands and claiming it to be your own. So you are also a big thief. I am a small thief, you are a big thief." So in other words, all of us in this world are thieves so long as we do not accept that everything belongs to God. Not a single person belongs to us. We are at best trustees. So one who holds all this wealth without using the service of the Lord or for the welfare and benefit of others is also like a thief, and he also is subject to similar kinds of punishments. So what kind of punishments are available to those who perform sin? One suffers materially by accidents, by disease. These are all the results of sins committed in previous life. One may also be sent to hell, where one gets a certain kind of body, a special kind of subtle body, to different Narak Lokas. The Srimad Bhagavatam explains that there are 28 kinds of Narak Lokas, only a sample. And different kinds of sinners go to these different planets get appropriate punishments for their sinful activity. And they will all be getting suitable bodies to receive that punishment. And after they have finished that punishment, then again they come back to the earth. So in the same way, notice here that it is like a crime committed and we have to suffer for it. Just like a person who is in a jail, he is suffering for his crime that he has committed outside. Now, it is not that he will indefinitely be in a jail. If somebody has stolen, he may get 1 month in the jail. But by living 1 month in the jail, he has made up for whatever crime he performed. Then he is released. So for every moment of suffering that the prisoner undergoes in the jail, he is reducing the stock of his pap. And in this way, gradually when all the stock of pap is exhausted, then the person comes back from the hellish planet to the earth planet. Just like the prisoner, by every day of living in the prison, atones for his crime, and gradually after the 1 month is over, he is a free man again. So this is how pap and punya take us up and take us down. Pap takes us down, punya takes us up, but both keep us in the material world, in the miserable go-round, round and round, in the wheel of samsara. So here we see the example of the jail. The person is exhausting his punya or his pap, and because he is staying there long enough, therefore, one day when he exhausts the limit of his suffering, that he will come out and be a free man again. So at this time, we will take a short break for herbal tea. Having heard enough about pap and punya, and after having taken herbal tea, kindly return here, refreshed, to hear more about the law of karma. Hare Krishna. I hope feeling refreshed. We saw that the law of karma is the law of action and reaction, cause and effect. For every action, there is an appropriate reaction. Now, sometimes when we perform a karma, the reaction may come immediately. Sometimes it may take a little time. Sometimes it may take a long time. It doesn't matter whether the reaction comes immediately or after some time. The reaction to our karma will definitely come. It is only a question of time. There are certain examples of instant karma from our daily life. For example, if I bang my car into another car, then immediately there is a reaction. That is instant karma. All the public will come and they will start creating a big noise. So instant reaction. There are some which may take a little time. For example, if I go outside to a hotel and eat some food which may be contaminated, I may develop food poisoning. But this food poisoning may take a while to manifest. It may come the next day. So we get the reaction of murderer. The murderer may commit a crime and he may get caught only after 1 year. So the reaction comes after a long time. There are certain illnesses or diseases like AIDS, for example, which may take as long as 20 years to manifest its symptoms. Which means that the sin was committed 20 years back and the reaction is coming only now. There is a time lag of 20 years between the crime and the result. So similarly, karma can be instant or it can be delayed. These are simple examples from our daily life. But there is also the logic of extending this to previous lives and the future lives. I will tell you a little story concerning this gentleman. Do you recognize him? He is Dhritarashtra, the father of the Kauravas. Many lifetimes before he became King Dhritarashtra, he was a hunter. And one time when he was in the forest, he killed the 50 young birds of the children of two birds in their nest. The mother bird and father bird were heartbroken to see that this hunter had killed all their 100 children. All the 100 young baby birds were killed by this hunter. Now, this is a very bad karma, a great sin. So the reaction to that sin was that this hunter would also have to see his own 100 children dying even though he was living. Generally, it is the order of the universe that the younger should die before the older. So children will die after their parents. Generally the parents die early and then the children. But if while parents are living, the children die, it is an indication that there is some sin of some past life because of which a person has to see the death of a child. So therefore, Dhritarashtra, or this hunter rather, he would have to see his 100 children dying before his eyes. But in order to get 100 sons, much punya is required to be done. There are many parents or couples who do not have a child. The reason is there is some sin of a previous life because of which they are unable to conceive a child. So that in order to attain or obtain a child, one needs punya. One who does not have a stock of punya cannot have a child, and particularly son, who can do the pinda and the shraddha to relieve the forefathers from falling into hellish conditions. So, in order for this hunter to be able to receive the reaction to that sin that he had committed of killing the 50 birds, he had to wait a long time to accumulate first of all the punya that was necessary for him to get 100 sons, and then finally when that stock of punya had sufficiently built up and he got the 100 sons, then the time was ripe for him to receive the reaction to the sin that he committed by killing the birds. And do you know how many lifetimes elapsed in this process? 50 lifetimes. In other words, Dhritarashtra, the hunter, received the reaction to that sin of killing the birds after 50 lifetimes, because he was not yet ready to receive that reaction. And therefore he became King Dhritarashtra, and he had to see all his 100 sons, the Kauravas, die even though he was still living. This is one example of delayed karma, very, very delayed karma. So many times we are not able to receive the reactions of our sins or our piety because we are not sufficiently stocked with punya or paap. Dasharatha Maharaj, for example, he was cursed by the parents of Shravan that he would also die heartbroken because of his son. But Dasharatha Maharaj that time was a young man and he had no son. So he had to wait for many years before Ram was born, and Ram became a young man and went to the forest, and then heartbroken Dasharatha Maharaj passed away. Of course, the story of Dasharatha Maharaj is unique because it deals with the Lord. So this is not exactly in the realm of karma, But nevertheless, the point is well made, that we receive the actions or the reactions to our actions, but the reactions may sometimes take time to come because we are not yet ready to receive them. That is the reason why sometimes the reactions are delayed. Each karma is like a seed that we sow. When you sow a seed in the soil, then it will grow. But different kinds of seeds exist, and each of them, when watered and put in the right kind of soil, will eventually sprout, become a plant, finally a tree, and they will all yield fruits. Some fruits will be sweet and some will be bitter. If you sow a mean seed, you cannot expect to receive a mango fruit, which is sweet. You will receive a mean fruit, which is very bitter. Similarly, when you sow a mango seed, you will not get a bitter mean fruit. Rather, you will get only a sweet mango fruit. So each seed has its own peculiar characteristic. And each fruit or plant will fructify at its own time, according to its own nature, according to the nature of the soil, according to the climate, and for so many other factors. Similarly, when we perform different kinds of karma, we are, so to speak, sowing different kinds of seeds. Now, each of these seeds are going to produce fruit sometime, sooner or later. But each will produce fruit differently at different times, just like the papaya seed when sown alongside the mango seed and the apple seed. All three plants will grow into trees and produce fruit, but at different times. Papaya at one time, apple at another time, mango at another time, because that is their nature. Similarly, if today we commit 1,000 acts, karma, we have sown 1,000 seeds. Now each of these seeds is a unique seed. Each seed will fructify according to its nature and the circumstances at its own proper time. And it will produce fruit. And then we will be forced to eat that fruit. You have no choice. When you eat in your house, if something is bitter, you have the choice to not eat it. If something is sweet and you like it, you have the choice to eat more of it. But the seeds, the fruits that come out of your karma are not like that. If it's bitter or sour, you have to eat it. Forcefully, Mother Nature will push it into your mouth and make you bite and eat and swallow. Similarly, the sweet fruit, that also you will get. But you will get only as much as you deserve. Even if you like it and you want more, Mother Nature will snatch it away because you don't deserve it. So all these different fruits will come at their own appropriate time. So all the seeds of karma that we sow at every moment of our life will bear fruit and come back to us today or tomorrow. Can you imagine how many seeds we are all sowing? Every moment of our life we are acting. We are performing some karma. Sometimes in one action we are performing many karmas. For example, I am breathing. Even as I breathe, many germs may be inhaled by me and may die. So in one instant I have killed so many germs. So in this way, we are performing millions and millions of karmas every day of our life. And we have been doing it from time immemorial, ever since the soul has come into this material world. So just imagine, how many seeds have we sown? And all these fruits are going to come back to us. And they are already coming back to us in different forms. So sometimes people say that why is it that we receive the reactions of our karma in the next life or the 5 lives later or 10 lifetimes later? The answer is here. because the seeds are all different, the soils are different, the watering conditions are different. Therefore the karmic seeds also, they fructify at different times. So some seeds may fructify in this life, some in the next life, some after 10 lives, some after 100 lives, but it will come. So this is the first reason to understand that the reactions of our karma may come any time, and it is not necessary that the reaction must come only now in this life. The second reason to understand why our karma may come back as a fruit or as a reaction even many lifetimes later is to consider the example of a thief who is caught by the police. Now, if the thief says that the theft was committed yesterday I was wearing a yellow shirt, now I am wearing a white shirt, therefore you cannot catch me, will the argument hold good? No. Why not? Because the police will say, it doesn't matter what kind of clothes you are wearing, you are the same person yesterday and today, you have committed the crime, therefore the punishment will go to you. Now, we have already seen that the body is like a dress. In the last lifetime, you had one dress. In this lifetime, you have another dress. So why should the dress matter? You were the one who performed that karma, so you must receive the reaction, whatever be the dress that you are wearing in the last life or this life. It doesn't matter what dress you are wearing, in other words, it doesn't matter what body you have. In other words, it doesn't matter in what lifetime the reaction comes back to you. It will surely come back. There is no doubt about this. And the third point, the third reason why we should understand that karmic reactions can come at any time in the future, not necessarily only in this life, is to know that ignorance of the law or ignorance or forgetfulness of the cause is not an excuse. The fact that I do not remember that I committed a particular crime is not argument to prevent us from getting the reaction to the crime, or to say that I did not know that this is a crime is also not a valid excuse. Sometimes we see a small child is also suffering like anything. The child has not committed sins in this life, so why is it suffering in this life? Because of some sins of the previous life. The child doesn't know anything, what is sin, what is piety. The child is completely ignorant, but still, ignorance of the law is no excuse. Even in a court of law, I cannot stand in front of a judge and say that I did not know that stealing is a crime. The judge will say, well, you are a human being, a citizen of this country. It is your duty to acquaint yourself with the law. And if you do not do your duty as a citizen to understand the law, and you violate the law out of ignorance, nevertheless you will be penalized. So similarly, the law of karma applies to the human beings. We cannot say that I do not know that this is the law of karma. The law of karma is a law of nature. It will act upon us whether we know it or not, whether we like it or not. And therefore, it is our duty as human beings to understand what are the different kinds of activities we should perform and what are the kinds of activities we should avoid. If we do not use our human form of life to understand this, then very likely we will commit sins and we will have to suffer because of that. So therefore, let us now understand the concept of prarabdha karma and sanchit karma. Prarabdha karma means, or rather let us consider sanchit karma first. Now start at a particular time in this life, say when you were just about to be born. Now you have so many millions of lives behind you, and in all those millions of lives you have sown so many seeds. Of them, many seeds have already been fructified, we have eaten the fruits and digested them. Many fruits are still maturing, but they have not yet matured. Many fruits are going to mature very shortly. So, all the sum total of your karmic reactions, all the seeds that you have sown, that is called Sanchit Karma. All the reactions which you have not yet received till today is your Sanchit Karma, the totality of your karma. And that portion of the Sanchit Karma which is due to fructify in this lifetime, that is called Prarabdha Karma. That means those karmic actions which are going to bring about a reaction in this life, they are called Prarabdha Karma. Let us take a simple example. Suppose you take a loan to run your business. Now the bank says that you have to pay so much money every year. So in the first year you pay 1,000 rupees. Second year you pay 2,000 rupees. So every year you have a fixed amount that you are supposed to pay. But when was that decision taken? In the very first day of the first year. Because you perform such an activity that obliged you to be liable to pay for so many years to come. When you took a loan of 1 lakh rupees, it is not that you have to pay on the second day. You have to pay some in the first year, some in the second, and so on. So therefore, different installments go out at different times of the year. In the same way, when we perform so many karmas or activities, the reactions come in different lives. Some installments are due in this life, some installments of our karmic reactions are due in the next life, and some in the next life, and so on. Each at their own time, they will fructify. So whatever karmic reactions are coming to us in this lifetime that are due to us, that is Prarabdha Karma. And the totality of all the karmic reactions which we have not yet received, that is called Sanchit Karma. So therefore we should know that every action will bring about its reaction sooner or later. Good karma, that is pious activities or punya, and bad karma, vikarma or pap, do not cancel each other out. Suppose, today I steal something. I know it is a sin. So can I say, well, I have stolen something today, 1,000 rupees. Tomorrow I feel guilty. So let me donate that 1,000 rupees to a poor man. So I am free now. No. You have to suffer the bad reaction to that stealing act, and you also have to enjoy the good fruit of that donation. So you will have to suffer and enjoy separately for each of the karmas that you perform, good or bad. This is the meaning of the phrase that they do not cancel each other out. Now I will tell you a small story regarding a king called King Mriga. This story appears in the Srimad Bhagavatam. King Mriga was a very great king, a very pious king. He was very charitably inclined. He always liked to donate to the Brahmins. And, as you know, the mother cow is considered the ideal object of charity, of giving charity. Because cow was considered very precious in the Vedic culture. So the kings would always give cows in daan or charity to the brahmanas. So this King Mriga, he had thousands and millions of cows in his goshalas. And whenever he used to perform some yajnas, like you see in the background, and all the brahmanas would gather, so he would liberally, like all the kings in the past used to do, he would give these cows in charity. Thousands of cows to each Brahman. And not lame cows, old cows, no. Young, milking cows, and not only that, they had gold on their horns, horn, their horns were tipped with gold, they were wearing all kinds of ornaments of pure gold. Such were the cows that were gifted by the kings in those days. So, one time what happened was that one King Vrigha donated thousands of cows to one Brahmin. That Brahmin went away with the cows. Unfortunately, one of the cows from that herd which had been donated strayed back and came back to the Goshala of King Vrigha. And when the next Brahmin came, King Vrigha donated many cows together. But by chance, that other cow which he had donated earlier to the first Brahmin also came in this group of cows. So he donated that cow along with the others by mistake to the second Brahmana. Now the Brahmanas of those days were very pure, very sattvic, very sharp because of the stock of their penance, their tapasya. So therefore, the first Brahmin, by virtue of his penance, could understand what had happened. Immediately he came to the king and said, "My dear king, you have committed a sin, a crime. Why? Because you gave me so many cows in charity, but you gave the same cow again to another person. Now this is a great sin because you have stolen from a Brahmana. You have given the cows to me in charity, so they became my property. But once again you have taken one cow back and you have given to somebody, it means that you are a thief. You have stolen from a Brahmin. Stealing is a sin in itself, but stealing from a Brahmin is a very great sin. So therefore you will have to suffer. So I want my cow back." So King Vrigha was very sorry to hear this. So he called the second Brahmin, "My dear sir, I have come into this predicament by chance. It was not done deliberately. So please, I will give you millions of other cows. Let me have this one cow back." So the second Brahmin said, "No, you have given me this cow. It is now my property. I cannot give you back this cow. If I give you back this cow, you will be guilty of stealing. And in any case, once you have given the cow to me, it is no longer your property. You have no right to think about it. So do not ask me for this." The king pleaded and pleaded, but the second Brahmana would not listen. So the king again pleaded with the first Brahman, "You please relent. I am stuck between both of you. So you please find a way out. Be kind and compassionate upon me. Prevent me from the horrible effects of this sin. You please become kind and accept this mistake has taken place." The first Brahman said, "No, this cow is mine." King said, "I will give you millions of cows." "No, I want only this cow." So poor King Vrigha, what could he do? So both Brahmanas went away. And then King Vrigha had to suffer the reaction for this. But he was such a great pious king. He had a very great stock of punya, because of which he was destined to go to the heavenly planets. So when his death came, Yamaraj came, the lord of death, who awards the karmas to the different living beings. And he said, "My dear king, you have committed a great deal of pious activities, and therefore you are destined for heaven, but you have also committed a sin of stealing from a Brahmana. So the sin for that is that you have to get a lizard's body. So please tell me, what do you want to receive first?" So King Vrigha said, "Let me suffer for my sin first, and then I will enjoy." This is also a material mentality. We want to suffer first, get over with it, and enjoy, enjoy, enjoy. So King Vrigha was reborn as a lizard. And in the Srimad Bhagavatam it is explained that when in Dwarka Leela, Lord Krishna had many sons, and these sons were young boys. They had gone to play in the forest, and they were playing with a ball, and the ball happened to fall into a well. And when the boys looked into the well, what did they see? They saw a huge lizard that was very beautiful and colorful. Rang-barangi, multicolored lizard. And they were very astonished to see this lizard. And the lizard actually looked up. And then the boys went and reported to Krishna that we have seen such a wonderful animal in the well. Lord Krishna, of course, is Paramatma. He is in everybody's heart. He is all-knowing. So he knew what exactly had happened. So he came in and he touched the lizard. Immediately, the lizard assumed a heavenly form like that of a demigod, a golden, effulgent, shining form of great beauty. And then Krishna, because he was behaving like an ordinary human being, he asked the question, "Oh, who are you?" So he replied, "I was King Jagat in the previous life, and because of this event that happened," and Naila related the whole story, "I had to take birth as a lizard. Now, thanks to your touch, the touch of your lotus hands, my divine form, my spirit, my heavenly form, I have attained, and now I am going to the heavenly planets to live there for thousands and thousands of years to enjoy the fruits of my punya." Of course, Shine Punya Marti Lokam Vishanti. So after he would have exhausted the punya, still he was going to come down. So here from the story, we understand that good karma and bad karma do not cancel each other out. They remain separate and they have to be enjoyed or suffered separately. Then there is something called individual and collective karma. Individual karma we have already discussed, that for every action we perform, there is a reaction that I must receive. But there is also something like collective karma. Collective karma means that God brings together people who are destined to suffer or enjoy in a particular way. And then he gives a reaction to all together. Just like Lord Krishna wanted to get all the sinful people of the planet together at the time of the battle of Kurukshetra. So all the people came to Kurukshetra and then Krishna killed everybody by his mystic powers. Of course, he used all the soldiers as instruments to kill. But actually, Krishna accomplished his task through the soldiers. So similarly, God, through his material nature, may sometimes arrange for such disasters to take place, like plane crashes, earthquakes, cyclones, and so on, where many, many people may die or be injured together. So under God's supercomputer, all these living beings are brought together very perfectly, and then they are all forced to undergo a particular kind of suffering or enjoyment together. So this example here is of a plane crash. It is a great trauma, and even within this group there are many varieties of karma. So some are saved, some die, like in earthquakes. And sometimes collective karma can be positive also. That suddenly one country comes on top of the world. We see that just a few hundred years ago, the British Empire was the most powerful. England was the most powerful country in the world. They used to say that the sun never sets in the British Empire, because the British Empire was so large, it stretched across the whole globe, that at any one time when the sun was rising in the empire, at another place the sun was setting. So at any point of time all through the British Empire, the sun was shining. So powerful was England at that time. That was collective karma of that country. But now they are suffering the reaction for that. England now is facing the worst possible racial clashes. It is a terrible country to be in. In fact, many devotees who come from abroad, they come here and And he says that people sometimes criticize India because it is unclean, because of this, because of that. But what to speak of the Western countries? It is so full of uncertainties, so insecure, so dangerous. He said in London, you cannot even walk properly and be comfortable and confident that you will reach your home without getting assaulted. Even when I was in London, just recently, outside our temple, there were many vandals who came and broke the temple glasses. Even as I was just entering to give a class, they were simply just ruffians, just gundas, all blacks, browns, Asians from different countries, and whites all put together. They are always fighting with each other, clashing with each other. Life is hellish there. And as soon as I stepped out of the temple, well, just within 5 steps, I saw some 2 black youths assaulting a middle-aged man and smashing his car. All this happening in front of my eyes. So the devotees are saying that India may be dirty, it may be anything, but at least it is safe. At least you are confident you will come home alive. In this country, meaning England, he said, we don't know. He says, I tell my wife, you don't look at anybody. Because when you look at someone, that person will suddenly come and say, why are you looking at me? And he will shoot you. These things happen. So therefore, the devotee said, when you walk on the street, walk with your head down. Because you never know when some mad person will be on the street. So these racial clashes of all these different people from different parts of the former British Empire has gathered in England. And they are creating havoc there. Even last month, there was very bad racial violence there. And I read a very good comment by one person, Asian. Because many of the local Britishers, they resent that all the Asians and Africans are coming, West Indians are coming there. They don't want them there. So do you know what the Asians are saying? We are here in your land because you are there in our land. This is karma. Collective karma coming back. You enjoyed at the expense of others by exploiting other countries, by milking them of their blood and sweat and toil. You exploited them and became the greatest power. Now, here is a reaction. Nowadays, nobody cares about England. Now, England is no longer the most powerful country in the world. So this is collective karma coming back. The whole country has to suffer. And now, in the early part of the century, then suddenly Germany became very powerful. Then Russia became very powerful. Now America is very powerful. But soon America will also go. Up and down, collective karma. Because so much of sin is being perpetrated in America. So sinful in the name of advancement. Therefore, they will also have to face their collective karma. They will also have severe reactions coming to them in due course of time. Now they are sailing on the high waves of the punya of the past. Therefore things are going on. But after a few years or generations, things will again deteriorate very badly. So this is collective karma and individual karma. So therefore the question arises, what is this thing called destiny or fate? Is everything destined? Is there any scope for our free will? If God is doing everything, if everything is coming back to me, then what is the situation about my destiny? So every karma is like an arrow. When you shoot the arrow is gone. Even 1 second or 1 fraction of a second after you have shot the arrow, can you run after the arrow to catch it and pull it back, saying, sorry, I made a mistake? No. Once the arrow is shot from your bow, it is shot. Gone. No longer are you in control of it. When you have fired a bullet from a gun, once it is fired, you have no control. You have a choice before firing. But once you fire, then you do not have control. Similarly, you have a choice before speaking something. We all have a tendency to speak. And many times we felt, oh, I should not have spoken this to such and such person. But it is too late. The word has already come from our mouth. So then it is too late to draw back. So karma is like that. We shoot an arrow or we perform a karma. We have a choice before we perform the karma. But after we have performed the karma, then we have no choice. The reaction must come back to us. Then we cannot say, oh, I am sorry I shot that arrow, or I am sorry I performed that karma, now I do not want the reaction. So material nature will say, no sir, or no madam, you have to receive the reaction. It will come whether you like it or not, because you shot that arrow, you performed that karma. Imagine, this gentleman, he has jumped from the top of a building, and after jumping, he repented. He regretted, oh, I should not have jumped, I am going to die, what will happen to me? So, can he save himself now? Too late. He should have thought about it before jumping. So, we should think, well, before we perform a karma, look before you leap, that is a saying. So literally here, he should have looked carefully before he leaped. But he did not. He jumped. So now, he is going to face his reaction, and that is death. So, when he was standing on top of the building, what was his destiny? His destiny was open. He could have lived or he could have died. But once he jumped, at the moment of jumping, he sealed his destiny. What was his destiny? He was going to die. It may have taken a few seconds, but his destiny was sealed the moment he left the top of the building. His destiny was that in 5 seconds I will die. So similarly, when we perform a karma, our destiny is sealed for that karma. I must receive that reaction today or tomorrow, sooner or later. So, the collection of all such reactions to karma that we have performed is our destiny. So destiny or prarabdha or fate is nothing but our reactions, the reactions to our actions coming back to us. That is all. So it is not that God is responsible for our sufferings. Our sufferings are coming to us because we have performed some things in the past. And this is our destiny. So there is a saying, man is a maker of his destiny. And that is correct. According to what actions we have performed in the past, the reactions are going to come. So we have created our own destiny, our own kismat, naseeb, like call it what you may. So we and we alone are responsible for all the events in our life. So we should not blame anyone. Oh, why has he done this? Why has this thief come to steal my money? Of course, you should try to stop the thief. But if it is beyond your control and the thief has gone away, then you should know that that is your destiny. So when we take birth in this world, we are born with a certain destiny. That destiny means that certain things are fixed for you the moment you take birth. How much happiness, material happiness you will get in this life? How much material distress you will get in this life? When you will die? How you will die? Who will be your husband? Who will be your wife? How much you will quarrel in your marriage? What kind of children you will have? All these things will be destined when you are born by your past karma. So this destiny is being built simply on the basis of past activities. So the destiny is the aggregate of karmic reactions that have not yet borne fruit and that are surely going to bear fruit in the near future, or what has just borne fruit. So sometimes we may be born with certain diseases. Someone has a natural tendency for some disease like asthma, for example. That is his or her destiny from the previous life. So the question then arises, why do bad things happen to good people? This question is commonly asked. same question appears in the mind of one American gentleman who was a Jewish priest called Krishna. So Krishna, his son, had a very deadly disease. Krishna was a very pious man, and right from childhood, his child had all this very bad disease, and he was very upset about it. So he thought and thought a lot. And when he reflected, he wrote a book called Why Do Bad Things Happen to Good People? And what was his conclusion? He concluded that there are three things we have to consider. He said, or rather two things. He said, number one, God is all-powerful, or He is all-merciful. He cannot be both. Why? Because I am a good man, my child is innocent, but still we are suffering from this disease. Why has God done this to me and to my child? If He was all-merciful, then surely He would not have allowed this. But if He was also all-powerful, then surely He would not have allowed. So because this has happened to me, I conclude that God is all-merciful, but He is not all-powerful. So He is a jolly good fellow. He is a nice man. He wants good to be done to me, but He is not strong enough to keep my suffering away. So this was a conclusion of Rabbi Krishna. Just see how many kinds of misconceptions come about because of being unaware of the law of karma. We are so fortunate that Bhagavad Gita is teaching us these things in such a simple manner. Even a child will know this philosophy more than a great theologian like Rabbi Krishna. So good things happen to bad people and bad things happen to good people, all because of our past karma. Consider the predicament of this farmer. The farmer has harvested many grains and he has stored them in that silo. The silo is a storage can for grains. So what he has done, he has opened it from the top and thrown in the grains. So in the first year, he had bad grain. But anyway, he stored it from the top, he threw it down, and he kept it there. Next year, he got very good grain. Again, he threw that from the top and filled the silo. But when he was taking out the grain, he was taking out from the bottom, here. First in, first out. Because it is easy to take out grain from here, really. So when he took out the grain in the second year, he saw the bad grain. So what does it mean? It means that the grain that he had put in the previous year was coming out now. But gradually as he got the bad grain, slowly, slowly, slowly the good grain would also come after some time. So in the same way, there may be someone who has done good now in this life, but may have done bad in the previous life. So the previous reactions are coming now, to a good person. So therefore the bad things are happening to a good person. Replied, my dear friend, don't worry. You are destined for the spiritual world. You are destined for a very bright future. So God has understood that you have come on the right path. He appreciates very much the step you have taken. And because He is very eager for you to come back to the kingdom of God and become permanently free from your problems, so what is He doing? He is giving you a concentrated dose of all your bad karma. He is finishing off all your bad karma very fast, very quickly. He is giving you a double dose. So that very quickly you will finish off all your sufferings and then you will be happy and you will go back to the spiritual world. But what about my friend? Oh, your friend, he will have much suffering to come. So God is very kind. He said, let me give all his future good karma also, let me give it now itself. So whatever good karma was supposed to come to him much later, let me give that also now as a double dose. Let him commit more and more sin because he wants that. And then after that,
he will suffer in hell. This is the answer. So we should not get confused or bewildered thinking, oh, he is such a bad man, but he is enjoying life, and he is such a good man, and he is suffering so much. No. Everything happens perfectly in the kingdom of God. God's justice is perfect and complete. In the Bible there is a saying, the mills of God grind slow, but they grind exceedingly fine. You follow the meaning of the saying? God's chakki is moving nicely. Moving. But it moves slowly, because God is not in a hurry. God is going slowly at his own pace. Because when he does something, he does it very thoroughly. So when he crushes somebody, he really crushes them. He crushes round and round. So now the grinder may be at a certain position, and the person who is very sinful and appears to be enjoying life may be somewhere else. But when the grinder reaches him, his time will come. He will also be crushed. So God's chakki, God's grinder goes slowly, but it will spare no one. But you know, all of you have experience with a chakki. When you start, immediately some of the things, they come out on the top. You have seen that? They come on the side, on the top wall of the chakki. So who are those? These people. They are out of the chakki. They don't have to worry. Because they are performing neither karma nor vikarma, but a karma, which is bhakti, devotional service. So, they have neither sin nor piety. So they are fully happy because they are performing activities like chanting the names of the Lord and worshipping God. This is a photo from Bogota, Colombia in South America. In South America, there are people chanting Lord Krishna's names with great faith and devotion. So they will be spared from the chakki of God. But even here in this land of Bharatvarsha, which is called Punya Bhumi, if somebody is not taking shelter of the Lord, he will not be spared. Even Brahma, the creator, will not be spared if he does not become a devotee of the Lord. However small or big we may be, the grinding mills of God will grind. It may temporarily appear that there is some injustice, but in the court of God there is no injustice. There is a saying in Hindi, Bhagwan ke darbar mein der ho sakti hai lekin andher nahi. So it may appear that there is some time for the person to receive his bad reactions, but he will get it. Devotees are performing bhakti. They are roasting the seeds of their karma, both punya and pap. These are neither concerned with punya nor with pap, because both punya and pap bind one to the material world. Punya will take us to heaven and then bring us back to the earth. Pap will take us to hell and to the lower species of life and then bring us back to the earth and to the human species of life. So the samsara chakra will go on and on, round and round. But for one who takes refuge of Lord Krishna, he will become permanently freed, because he has nothing to do this wheel, this round and round business. He is destined to become free because of performing a karma. So let us consider this chart, which is like a summary. You see three columns: karma, karma, and akarma. Can you see clearly? Karma is material activity. So is the karma. But akarma, like chanting the holy names of the Lord, etc., are spiritual activities. Karma is punya, vikarma is pap, but akarma or bhakti is beyond pap and punya. Karma or punya are certain prescribed acts mentioned in the Karma Kanda section of the Vedas. So by that, perform punya. Vikarma or sin are those activities that are prohibited in the Shastra or in the scriptures. which are against the scriptural injunctions. And what is akarma? Are acts performed on behalf of God to please Him, for the sake of worshipping Him, serving Him. Such acts are called akarma. What are the examples of karma or punya? Charity to the poor, digging wells, planting trees, etc. Please remember that the word karma has two meanings here. Karma has a general meaning which means any activity, and in this context karma means punya. Examples of vikarma are cheating, hurting others, stealing, vices, eating meat, etc. What are the examples of akarma? Chanting the holy names of the Lord, worshipping Him, etc. What are the reactions that come about when we perform punya or karma? Wealth, beauty, good birth, health, happiness. What are the results that come when we perform sin? Poverty in the next life, disease, or maybe even in the same life. Disease, ugliness, suffering, low birth, etc. What are the reactions or the results we receive from akarma? No material reactions, but only spiritual reactions. We will be achieving devotion to God, detachment from the world, purity, and ultimately get liberated from the cycle of birth and death and go back to the kingdom of God. Whereas both karma and vikarma will bind us to the cycle of birth and death. So what will be the next birth to one who does punya? Birth in a good family on earth or a birth in the higher planets? What happens to one who performs vikarma? Birth, you have to undergo punishment in hell, or birth in the lower species. What happens to one who does both these things? Combination, sometimes this, sometimes that. Like King Riga. Suffer for the sins and enjoy for the pious activities. And what is the destination of one who performs bhakti? He is destined to go back to the spiritual world. Therefore, the only way to get out of the miserable Ferris wheel game of the cycle of birth and death is to take shelter of the Lord. Therefore, one great poet and devotee has sung, Punarapi Jananam, Punarapi Maranam, Punarapi Janani Jathare Shayanam, Iho Samsare Bahu Gustare, Kripaya Pare Pahi Murare. My dear Murari, my dear Lord Krishna, this samsara, this cycle of birth and death is very painful, very difficult to cross, full of suffering. So please, it is only you who can save me. Please deliver me. O Murari, Lord Krishna, I am repeatedly tossed in the waves of birth and death. I am made to be born again and again, and made to die again and again. In this way I have been occupying the wombs of billions of mothers. Please kindly shower your merciful glance upon me and deliver me from this ocean of nescience or ignorance. This should be what we should try to do, to become free from this vicious cycle of karma vikarma and the vicious resultant cycle of birth and death. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Ram, Hare Ram, Ram Ram, Hare Hare. We will discuss more about akarma later on, and tomorrow the topic will be Kal and Prakriti, time and material nature. Thank you very much for your kind and patient attention, and now we will have question and answer. If you simply keep Him in your heart, then you will not have any other worries. All worries and miseries will go to a distant place. They will not remain in your heart. So all those who want to be happy in life, you may take shelter of Him. But those who do not want to be happy, you need not take shelter of Him. Choice is ours. Hare Krishna.
Whether any gifts affect in the next life or in this life also?
Karmic reactions may come at any time. depending on the karma. Like I gave the example, some seeds produce a fruit very soon, after 1 month. Some seeds take 1 year, some take 10 years. Depending on the kind of karma that we have performed, the reaction may come in this body, in this life, or it may come the next, or it may come 50 lifetimes later, like it happened in Dhritarashtra's case. It doesn't matter.
Why then Valmiki first became Valmiki and all that, but after there is earlier history that he was good things, bad things and all that. Why it's so?
That's a good question. The example of Valmiki. Earlier he was a dacoit, Ratnakar. Performed many wicked activities. But by association with Narad, all his sins simply vanished. They were burnt to ashes. How is that? Because Ratnakar was committing sin. Because he was a dacoit, a thief and so many things. But that sin could not be nullified by punya. When we spoke about karma vikarma, a punya pap not being able to cancel each other, we talked about material activities, karma and vikarma. But when he encountered Narad Muni, who is a great devotee of the Lord, he got not karma or vikarma, but akarma. He got bhakti. And because of that bhakti, he was able to destroy the seeds of all his pasarma. So bhakti is the fire that destroys the seeds of both pious and sinful activities. So bhakti destroys both pap and punya. Because bhakti is spiritual. Whereas punya and pap are both material. So bhakti is given only by one who has bhakti. Who better than Narad Muni? So Narad Muni had bhakti. He gave that bhakti through his mercy, through his instructions to Ratnakar, and Ratnakar was able to burn to ashes in course of time the sinful reactions in his heart. But that was because he surrendered to Narad Muni. He followed his instructions sincerely, and therefore he was able to do it. The story of Ajamil will take a long time to say, so I will not say the story, but I will say very briefly that even Ajamil, in his youth, he was a very devout man. He was a devotee of Lord Narayan, and that is why he named his son as Narayan and not as Bunty or Pinky. So therefore, he got the benefit of calling Narayan, Narayan, Narayan. Even though he did not intend to call Narayan, the Lord Narayan, he was calling his son, but he got the benefit of calling Narayan's name. So, our tradition in this country is that people are given names like Govind, Gopal, Narayan, Hari, Vishnu. Why? So that you will perform a karma even unknowingly. And you get the benefit. Just like a medicine taken without knowledge also helps. Similarly, God's name or spiritual activity done without knowledge is also powerful. It is called Ajnata Sukriti. That Sukriti which is done in an Ajnata way, without knowing. Therefore, Ajamil got the benefit of his devotional life in the past, and because he chanted the name of Narayan. And how did he chant the name of Narayan? Even though he did not chant for the Lord, but he chanted the name in a very helpless state of mind. Because he was so fearful. Therefore, the Vishnu Dutas, or the messengers of Lord Vishnu, immediately came to protect him from the Yama Dutas.
Does akarma cancel vikarma?
Akarma doesn't cancel vikarma. Akarma burns to ashes both vikarma and karma.
Okay.
not just cancels, it burns to ashes, both karma and vikarma. But still, it takes time. Like for example, if you were destined by your karma to get the hand chopped off, but when you become the devotee of the Lord and perform a karma very sincerely with your heart, then the Lord very mercifully, what does He do? He compresses that reaction into a small cut on your finger in the kitchen. The karmic seed remains. You must suffer the reaction to the karma even after you become a devotee. But that reaction will be minimized to a very small degree. So instead of getting your hand cut, you get a small cut on the finger. So this is the effect of a karma upon karma and vikarma. The karmic reactions will continue even after you become a devotee. Just like if you switch on the fan and then you switch it off, the fan will not immediately stop. It will continue to move for some time because of the past motion, the momentum. Similarly, we may become a devotee now, but we have been performing karma, vikarma for so many millions of lives. That momentum is still there. So the reactions will keep coming. But if you keep performing a karma or bhakti, then gradually all these seeds will be roasted and then pure spirituality will dawn. The real nature of the soul will come to the surface. Of course, we must be careful to not keep on switching the fan on again and again. Did you get the point? That once you come to bhakti, then you have nothing to do with akarma vikarma, with paap and punya. But now you should not do any paap or punya again. Now you should do only bhakti. All your activities should be done only for the Lord. Then your karma vikarma will be destroyed. If a person is dying of hunger and has only one option of meat, if he has it, is it sin? And if yes, what would be the punishment? You see, I am not Yamaraj, so I may not be able to exactly give you specifically what would happen, but if the situation comes about that someone doesn't have any food to eat at all and only one chicken is there or goat is there, then fine. He may kill because the higher duty is to preserve his own life. So he may kill as a last resort. But this is a hypothetical question. How many of us have experienced this situation? And is it likely that any of us will ever experience this situation? In this world today, how many are actually experiencing this situation? So therefore, it is only a hypothetical thing. It is a question. Actually, anyone who wants to avoid meat eating can easily do it if he or she agrees and is convinced. If one doesn't want to stop eating meat, one will give all kinds of arguments. Not give up eating meat. If destiny is fixed at birth, what is the need of doing any duty in the material world? Should we just relax and sleep? If you relax and sleep, the destiny for that, you will get the body of a bear. That will be the destiny for that activity. Every activity has its reaction. So when we say that everything is destined or fixed at birth, it means that certain reactions of your karma are going to come to you. That is fixed. But how you respond to that reaction, how you act in your life, that is not destined. That is fixed for you. That is in your hand. You have free will. For example, if a thief comes to my house, of course I don't have a house and I don't have much money also, so nobody will come. But anyway, just an example. If a thief comes to my house and he steals my money, I have various ways of responding. I can give up my life thinking, hi, hi, what has happened? I am gone, I am finished. Or I may say, maybe I stole his money last life. Now he is stealing my money, account is squared and settled. All is parent square, it's all right. And I'm a bit detached. You may think like that. So how we act in a particular situation, that determines our further destiny. I will tell you the story of one real life situation. There is one gentleman I know who lives in Jaipur. He is a great devotee of Govinda Dev, who is the presiding deity of Jaipur. Very famous temple. Every day the citizens of Jaipur go for Mangal Arati, early morning darshan of Lord Govinda. One day, early morning, when he was taking darshan, he suddenly got news that his whole house with his godown has caught fire. And there was 2 crores worth of material there. He was a very rich businessman. So he came back and he saw that the whole thing was on fire. Already fire flames had enveloped everything. People had called the fire engine. It was due to come. There was nothing this man could have done. No use of carrying buckets and fire extinguishers, no. The fire was too big. So what did he do? He thought, in any case the fire is too much, what can I do? It's beyond my control. By just standing here looking at the fire, am I going to control the fire? So he said, why should I miss my Mangalati darshan? So he went back and he remained there in front of Govinda Dev. And all his relatives, friends, are you mad? What has happened? Your house is burning. Can I stop it from burning now? I did not set it on fire. I came there. I saw that it is beyond my control. It is beyond anybody's control. What had to happen, happened. So why should I spoil this also? Today's day gone will be gone. If I miss today's darshan, then it is gone forever. I may get darshan tomorrow, but today's darshan is gone. Therefore, why should I waste my time just standing there looking at this? It was my destiny. It had to go. It went. This is one way of responding. Another way of responding would be the normal way. If somebody sees his house on fire, what will he do? Who was responsible? Who did this? Who did that? So many things would come up. So then, when things happen to us, they happen according to our destiny. But how we respond to situations in life creates future destiny for the future life. So we have free will to act and sleep, but rather we should perform activities which will be the cause of our spiritual upliftment. You said we will discuss akarma later. When will that later be? That will be on the 6th day. That is on, I think, Saturday. When we discuss different forms of yoga. Jivatmas of all kinds are bound to reunite with the Supreme Lord slowly or faster. Then why should we worry about the recycle of birth and death? Well, not bound to. Not all Jivatmas are bound to go back to the kingdom of God. Those who are determined to stay here will stay here forever. If a prisoner is determined to stay in the jail, even the jail warden will not be able to throw him out. He will deliberately commit some crime so he can again stay in the jail. So only those who sooner or later will come to the path of bhakti, only they will be allowed to go out of the cycle of birth and death, not other people. Others will remain in this material world. As a human being, everybody is given a chance to elevate themselves on the spiritual path. Then why only a few people get involved in spiritualism or interested in it? Because of free will. Somebody wants to come here, somebody wants to go there, like the friend, the 2 friends. One went to the temple, one went to the liquor bar. Free will can be used in different ways. That is our independence, our minute independence. Secondly, according to our desire, we associate. Jaisa sang, vaisa rang. As you associate, so shall your mind and your desires become. So if you associate because of some initial desire with those who like taking liquor, your desire to take liquor will also increase. And your desire to come to the spiritual path will reduce. On the other hand, If you associate with those who are devotees, who are spiritually inclined, then your desires on the spiritual path will increase and the desires for the other worldly things will go down. So this is the second point, that according to our association, we will develop desire for going on this path or on that path. So both our free will and the kind of sangha or the association that we have determines who goes on what path, the spiritual path or the worldly path. How is birth or fate related to horoscope or kundali? Are they true? The kundali that is taken out at the time of birth is simply a representative picture to some degree of your destiny. It is a map of your destiny. What was already decided before, the kundali is only showing you that. So the stars are not creating your destiny. The stars are only showing you what is your destiny. That is all. But of course today, one really doesn't know. Who knows how to read the stars well and who doesn't? 10 astrologers will give 10 different opinions. So better to keep out of astrology. So as devotees, we say, if my horoscope says that I am to die in 2 years, why should I worry? If that is Krishna's will, he will keep me alive longer. If Krishna's will, he will kill me before 2 years are over. So because a devotee is surrendered to Lord Krishna, he doesn't worry about astrology. He doesn't worry about what the stars have. So Prabhupada used to say, we have so many lines on our hand which indicate the future. But he said, you clap your hands in kirtan and all these lines will go away. In other words, all your destiny will change. When you clap your hands in kirtan, all your sins, your karma, vikarma will fly away, just like when you go to a tree and you clap your hand and the bird flies away out of fear. Same way, all your sins and piety will fly away. So therefore, we do not worry too much about kundalis. We worry about what is Krishna's desire. So we are dependent on Him. If He wants us in a certain way, we are happy with that. That should be the devotee's approach to this. How far is the blend of technology and karma hold good? Not good. Because technology and science, although it is a neutral thing in and of itself, is simply encouraging people to become atheistic and use the technology for sense gratification for sin. How many people are using TV for something good, for spiritual purposes, for Krishna consciousness? How many people are using technology for nice things, for akarma, not karma vikarma? How many are using for akarma? So therefore, all the technology and science is neutral in and of itself, but we were better off without it. But now that we are stuck with it, we have to make the best use of a bad bargain. So we say, okay, mic is there, so might as well use it for Krishna service. Technology has made the slide projector, might as well use it for Krishna service. Sometimes people ask, if you are saying like this, why do you people use technology? Because it's there. That is also Krishna's technology for using for Him. But we are not dependent on the slide projector and the mic. It is not that we will stop doing bhakti because there is no mic. So technology can be used as a helping tool. But usually technology is just killing the spiritual spark within us. It is making people atheistic. Therefore, if you want to use technology and want to avail of the good benefits of technology, you have to be very spiritually advanced to do that. Otherwise, you will misuse it for the wrong purposes. Why are the souls created? The souls are eternally existing, so they are not created like something of this world is created. Nevertheless, God expands Himself into the Atmas or the soul just to expand His enjoyment. Because even God, although He is Atmaram, fully satisfied within Himself, He doesn't need any other source of pleasure, but still because He is Swarat, fully independent, and He is fully in control, He wants to expand His enjoyment even further unlimitedly, Therefore, he expands himself into so many other living entities, the jivatmas, and engages in loving relationships with them, and by that exchange of love, the ananda, the spiritual bliss, increases both for God and for the part and parcels, the souls. Just like we do not like to be alone all the time. We want company of our friends, relatives, and then we are laughing, joking, sharing good moments. So our happiness increases in company. Why is this nature there with us? Because the nature is there in Krishna, in God. It is there in the seed, so it is there in the tree, in the fruit. So therefore, Lord Krishna has expanded himself into all these souls for the sake of increasing pleasure. Why is Bharat Bhumi known as Karma Bhumi and why not other lands? Because this is a very special place. Just like there are certain places where you can get more benefit, the government gives that if you go to this area, which is backward area, if you start an industry there, you will get so many benefits. No tax, no this, no that. Government does. So similarly, Lord Krishna also has arranged that certain places, if you are very favorable for bhakti, if you are born in India, then this is Punya Bhumi. Very easy to do bhakti here. Therefore, if having been born in India, you do not do bhakti, the punishment is also more. Because if a small child slaps somebody on the road, nobody takes seriously. But if a grown-up man slaps somebody, then there will be havoc. So like that, when someone is not spiritually cultured, is ignorant, he does some sin, he will get the reaction. But to a limited extent. But when somebody born in a cultured land does the same mistake, he will get a double reaction. He will get a very strong reaction. Therefore, there is so much suffering in India. That is why, because we are committing so much sin, even though we should be on the pure spiritual path. Soul is only one, it changes bodies. Then why is it that population is increasing, and how is it that number of souls are increasing? Yes, yesterday's question. I forgot to address it in the talk. Now, you remember I showed you that picture of 8.4 million species, the lower species, higher species, all the way going up. And I told you that that was like first standard, second standard, going up to the 10th standard. Now, imagine that the SSC board becomes very strict. And they say that from this time, we will only pass 1% of the students. If 100 students appear for SSC, only one will pass. So what happens in this year's SSC? 99 students will fail, one will pass and go out of the school. So this 99 has to appear again next year. But by next year what happens? Those 100 from the 9th standard have come to the 10th standard. So how many appear in the 10th standard? 199. Of them, how many are going to pass? One or two, maybe three, five. There will be so many left. So next year when they appear for SSC, how many will there be? Again 100 from those who were 8th standard 2 years ago, they will come. So population of 10th standard increases. Very few are passing out. So similarly, atmas from the lower species are coming. Higher, 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 naturally, by natural spiritual evolution, automatically we are coming to the 10th standard level, human form. But unfortunately in human form, most people are becoming sinners. So nobody is going back to the kingdom of God, only one out of so many millions. Rare soul. Manushyanam sahasreshu kaschit yatati siddhaye. Only one among thousands will go. So what happens to the rest? They have to stay back. So therefore population is increasing. But there is one more thing that happens in nature that doesn't happen in SSC. So to that extent this example is not perfect. And that is that SSC board has the liberty only of holding back people at the 10th standard. They cannot ask a student to go back to the 6th standard. Go back to the 4th standard. You go back to 2nd standard. No. But Mother Nature does that here. If a jivatma has come to human form, performs many sins, he may throw him down. Yes, you go to the lower species of life. You become a tiger. You become a mosquito. This may happen. So therefore, it is not that only the population of humans is increasing. We have good experience in Belgaum that even the population of mosquitoes is increasing. The population of rats is also increasing. The population of cockroaches is increasing. Why? Because those who are coming to 10th standard are so sinful, they are thrown down. Not to 9th or 8th, but to 3rd or 4th. So sinful, so bad. So therefore there are many species. And many, the population is increasing, some it is decreasing. Furthermore, we are considering only one planet. But life is existing on so many planets. Today we are born on this planet. Next life I may be born on other planet. And other beings on those planets may be born on this planet. So whether in one planet the population is increasing or decreasing, it doesn't matter. Because we have to see the totality. And even in the totality, it is just a small speck. Even though there are millions and millions of jivas, the population in the spiritual world is much, much more than that. Just like a jail, what is the population of a jail compared to the population of a city? Very small. So the population of the material world, which is a jail, is very small compared to the population of the spiritual world. So imagine the number of atmas existing. So if a few atmas increase, few thousand, few lakhs, few millions, it is nothing. It is like one grain in a bag of grains. Insignificant difference. So it doesn't really matter. So is it satisfactorily answered? Yes. If I am eating egg, am I eating meat? As good. Egg is also considered non-vegetarian. Nowadays there is this new false propaganda of vegetarian eggs. Please do not get misled by all this. Egg is non-vegetarian, so we should avoid. It is tamasic. It is stale. Are bhakti and shraddha the same? Shraddha is necessary for bhakti. When our shraddha or faith grows, it becomes bhakti. If one soldier kills the enemy while on his duty, what is the reaction of this karma? Of course, that depends. Every kshatriya has to undergo sin in killing. Even when the kshatriya is being trained to hunt in the forest, he will also undergo sin for that. So no one is excused. If someone does something, sometimes we may do something if it is necessary. Sometimes a parent may slap a child. Slapping someone is a crime. It's not good. You are offending someone. But the parent knows, whatever be the reaction, let me slap the child. Because it is for the child's good. So sometimes you may have to do something, even if the reaction is not good, for a higher purpose. So then ultimately it is in the hands of Yamaraj, to whom he wants to give a sin or a reaction for what kind of activity. In earlier days, people used to die in epidemics on large scale, collective karma. Now because of modern medicine, epidemics have come down. So does it mean karmic reaction is reduced by modern medicine? I would beg your pardon. I think that it is increased. Modern medicine has not reduced epidemics. It has increased epidemics. It may have reduced the epidemic of cholera, TB, such simple medicines, simple diseases. But each time there are new deadlier and deadlier diseases coming up. Is it not? Like AIDS. People died of cholera before. Now you have AIDS, such a deadly disease, killing lakhs and crores of people everywhere. Earlier, before that, you had herpes. And you had so many other deadly diseases. And let us be sure, whatever modern medicine makes, even if a particular disease is cured, very shortly there is a new disease standing at the doorstep, just waiting to come. So we will never be able to solve our problems by modern medicine, science or technology. If we want to solve our problems permanently, taking shelter of the devotional path is the only way. If a person kills any living thing, he has to be killed again by that particular living being. Is the cycle going on or nullifies here? Will I be killing him again? That means, what the question is it going to be an endless cycle? I kill him, he kills me, I kill him, he kills me, and it goes on. That is the question. Well, God uses somebody as an instrument. So, if I kill somebody, it means that I am misusing my free will. If somebody is being killed, it means that person is destined to be killed. So God only brings together he who is destined to be killed in a particular manner and a person who wishes to misuse his free will in that particular manner. He brings the two together, one who wants to kill and one who is destined to be killed. And God sits back. This is destiny. So therefore, that person who is killing will get the sin, but the person who was killed is now freed from that sin. Because he had earlier killed, he got the reaction, now he's free. But if he goes ahead and comes another killing, again he has to suffer. So in the Shastra it is said that for one who kills a cow, he has to be killed in as many lives and slaughtered in the same way as there are hairs on the body of the cow. So imagine how much suffering we will have to undergo. Because there are so many questions, but time is getting on. And I had thought I would conclude today early, but that was not to be. So, any case, these other questions we will take tomorrow. I will keep them with me or some other time. So, we will end here. Thank you very much for your patient and attentive hearing. We will just chant the prasadam prayers, which we could not do earlier. And then, please go ahead for prasadam and enjoy your prasadam. We have given notes for today, for yesterday's lecture, I beg your pardon, today. Today's lecture will come tomorrow, delayed karma, little bit. It will come after one day. So please bear with me. I have not been able to do too many things. But before you finish, you will get all the notes. So yesterday's notes will come today. Please read them and we will discuss further tomorrow. Mahaprasade Govinde. नाम ब्राह्मणे वैष्णवे स्वल्प पुण्यवताम राजन् विश्वासो नैव जायते शरीर अविद्या च जड़ेन्द्रियता है काल जीवे फेले विषय सागरे तार मध्य जीवाती लोभ माया सुदूर्मति ताके जेता कठिन संसारे कृष्ण बड़ा दयामाय करी बार जीव जाए स्वप्रसाद नद लोभाय शेयन्नामृत पाओ श्री श्री राधा कृष्ण गुण गाओ प्रेमे डाको चैतन्य निताय जय श्री कृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानंद श्री अद्वैत गदाधर श्रीवासादि गौर भक्त वृंद हरे कृष्णा 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 हरे 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 राम हरे राम।